Welcome. You're listening to the Internet Advisor Podcast with your co-hosts, Gary Baker, Foster Brown, and their team of experts. Since 1998, this program has been helping people like you with your computer problems, introducing you to valuable resources and programs, and promoting tech businesses in our area. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour radio program heard weekly on WJR 760 AM in Detroit and across the state on the Michigan Talk Network. Now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, and to a week that's been charged by the excitement around the world of the World Cup soccer. Well, you say, what? What's that? We'll tell you a little bit more about that and many ways of getting in touch with that. But the focus of our program today, our star attraction, is going to be speaking with Josh Linkner, an old friend of ours who's coming back. He's got a brand new book out called The Road to Reinvention. You don't want to miss a minute of that conversation, all coming up on the Internet Advisor, plus your questions in our second hour. Thank you very much for those folks listening to us live here on our flagship station, WJR. What a wonderful day in the neighborhood, isn't it? And also for the folks who are listening to us on our affiliate stations, thank you for joining us once again here for the Internet Advisor. I'm delighted to say we have our original crew back in here. Gary Baker is back from proudly standing on the sidelines and suffering with his son through a very tough final game of lacrosse.
Of lacrosse, weekend. State tournament lacrosse, and you know he plays for Catholic Central. And they played Brother Rice, and Brother Rice has never lost a state final since they've started state final games in lacrosse. They're a very, very good team, and it was great that Justin's team got to the finals, but exactly. They didn't persevere this time.
If you're going to lose, you might as well lose it to the best. Right?
Yeah, to the best,
there
exactly.
You well, you so know, they had a great time. The whole season was a wonderful time. He made all league and all region.
That's
this
wonderful.
Year. So as a sophomore. Getting very, moved up.
You can hear a little bit of the pride.
So, isn't it? Yeah. Can you tell?
Eddie Riddell, good to have you here in the house, too, as well.
You know, I like this minimalistic atmosphere in here.
Yeah,
I get more bagels that way, you know.
Yeah, there's...
What Ed's talking about is normally else? We have, like, six people in the studio waiting to gather on the microphones. Today is just the three of us hanging around here and having a good time. But we're going to have a very, very special guest, Josh Linkner, coming in.
Yes, coming back.
And
he's been
we've
here a number of times.
He's been on here a number of times, back to his E-Prize days.
That's right.
When that was one of the first attempts to link up... prizes with
online, yeah, online gaming, online
right.
advertising, and he's done a great job. Oh, actually, man. I met Josh before that when he had a website development company.
Oh, really?
And then moved that into E-Prize, which just took off, and it only made him half the wealth that he has today. But he went on and did a number of things as a partner with Dan Gilbert in
right.
Detroit.
Right.
Venture Partners,
right.
and now we'll talk to him about his Brandon. Second book.
Yes.
Right. Discipline Dreaming was his first book,
right.
which was wonderful.
We interviewed him back in 2011 when he first came out with that.
Yep.
And this new one, The Road to Reinvention, I think it's really neat, especially in terms of the passion he has for Detroit.
Yep.
And both as a venture capitalist and as somebody who really loves this city and wants to see it turn around.
You know, speaking of Detroit, I am amazed at all of the new shops and restaurants that are opening. I do a little mentoring on the side just mm-hmm. to help friends out or friends of friends. And I met somebody and we were just talking about business and how what they could do next to drive some traffic and mm-hmm. customers to their business. And we met at a brand new little restaurant bar five blocks from here on Cass Avenue. It's called Tony V's. Him and his brother have a couple other restaurants down on Wayne State campus.
Right.
But I had a wonderful sandwich. It's a great little place. And they keep expanding this way, opening up more and more new venues.
That
and
whole neighborhood down around
that's
has been transformed. That area, Eddie, this is some 35, almost 40 years ago when I first lived in this area.
was really run down, and it was nasty bars. It was a nasty neighborhood, and it has been so transformed. They sometimes talk about gentrification.
I was just going to say that this place could be in Manhattan, except for the prices. The prices are definitely not Manhattan prices, right?
But you know, you hear about the same thing, Norfolk, Virginia, that had the same thing happen down there. A lot of these places where the center cities have collapsed. We'll talk maybe more about this with Josh.
Well, Tony V's, I highly recommend it.
Great. That's, and there's lots of great places down there. Avalon Bakery is one of our favorite places down there. Ed, you're down at the Rensan, too.
I'm down there, you know, and I'm not really seeing much growing down there. I mean, the Rensan, it could probably hold 250 to 500 shops down there, and they're still the same ones that have been there since I've been there in 2005.
Yeah.
You know, there's not much opening at the Rensan. A lot of the restaurants in downtown between the Rensan and Ford Field and Comerica Park,
that's
taking
going
off.
Crazy.
Yeah. That's going crazy. But left or right of that, you know, if you go, I'm sorry, I'm not sure if it could be north and south of that, or left and right of the river, you still
east
don't see much.
Yeah, I think it's kind of the seeds of things that are growing. And again, it'll be interesting.
And a lot of people hope that way, too. And General Motors was hoping that would happen as well.
I think it's going to happen. It is happening slowly. Yeah. Well, folks, one of the other big things going on this week right now, of course, is World Cup soccer is taking place in Brazil. Now, most Americans say, ho-hum, what's that? And when is the football season going to start again? Well, folks, football, as it's determined by the other 6 billion people on the planet, is soccer. And it is, the world's eyes really are focused on Brazil right now.
Yep.
And it began on Thursday and will go until July 13th, I begin, is going to be the final match. What's kind of neat is if you go online right now, you find all sorts of ways of finding places to watch the World Cup soccer being played. What I'm fascinated by is how many free places there are.
Mm-hmm.
And the two places, ESPN and ABC, kind of own the broadcasts here in American television. But that's not the only place you can go. I know Comcast has a lot of ways of seeing it. But
So we're talking legal ways.
Legal.
Okay, continue. Continue. You may continue.
Yeah, no.
These are absolutely legal ways. And this is what fascinates me, is that they are trying to get people online to watch this, and so they're not, you know, you're not holding you up for like you know, $50 for the World Cup series.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things that happens in the U.S. Everyone wants the media rights to it, and they lock it down, and you have to use their medium to see it.
Well, they pay a lot to get those rights.
Yeah,
they
do.
They have to monetize it.
You know, but I tell you, what's fascinating is the just whole sorts of ways of seeing it. One of the ways that I use it right now is downloading an app to my iPhone, and you can do this on Android as well. This one happens to be FIFA, which is the international federation that covers and controls soccer. But you're getting an Android for that. It's got all the matches on it. We're going to be posting some things during our show and a little bit afterwards about places you can go, apps you can use, websites you can go to that will help you watch this incredible sporting event that's taking place in Brazil right now. But we're going to take a pause, and when we come back in a moment, it's Mr. Josh Linkner in the spotlight. Well, a great temptation when you have a guest like Josh Linkner is to spend a good deal of your time giving his CV, or curriculum vitae, in other words, telling you what his past has been, because there is so much to talk about. But we know from having talked with him in the past that the great fun is talking with Josh Linkner himself. So I'm just going to dive into this, Josh Linkner, and welcome you back to the Internet Advisor, and we'll pick up on the credits on along the way. How are you doing, Josh?
That sounds great. I'm doing great.
Hey, Josh.
Very good to talk to you again. And delighted to catch up with you now as you've published your second book that's out right now. And this one is called The Road to Reinvention, How to Drive Disruption and Accelerate Transformation. Is that taking up most of your time right now?
You know, it's not. I mean, it's obviously a time-consuming effort, but my full-time gig, as it is running Detroit Venture Partners, where my partners, Dan Gilbert, Brian Hermelin, and I are very focused on investing in early-stage tech companies to help rebuild Detroit through entrepreneurship.
Yeah, I love that. You're kind of putting your money where your mouth is, literally.
Yeah, and, you know, Josh, I read your column all the time in the Free Press, and I have not yet read the book. I've skimmed it. I just got it because I was out last week. Am I going to see a lot of you know, what you've written in the Free Press columns show up in the book, or is this something totally new?
Well, thematically, I mean, there's certainly some alignment. The book is really about the idea of proactive reinvention, that success in business and in life, really, is never a permanent condition. It happens at one point in time in the context of many external factors. And so the book helps readers reinvent their organizations, their communities, and their careers in advance of having something bad happen. In other words, don't wait to respond to a negative circumstance when you can really be the architect of the next chapter of your journey proactively. And so it's fun. The book covers not only how to reinvent, but it also talks a lot about Detroit. It talks about the period when Detroit was very full of reinvention and mm-hmm. we prospered. It talks about what happened when we failed to reinvent in the 50s and ultimately suffered greatly. And most importantly, it talks about the incredible reinvention that's happening here as we speak. So for any hometown readers, I think you'll really enjoy it.
Yeah.
Well, it's got great credits. Steve Case, the co-founder of AOL, and Rick Snyder, our governor here in the state of Michigan. Tom Lasorda, from the CEO of Chrysler, and actually a couple other car companies in his past. But as I'm looking at some of what you've written here, it really is about helping companies get more proactive. It talks about reinvention, but it's about proactive reinvention, as you state, right?
It is, and it also demystifies the process. I mean, I think many people are reluctant to reinvent, first of all, because they don't want to disrupt the apple cart. And, of course, the apple cart will be disrupted whether we like it or not. But it also, there's a myth that you have to be like some creative wizard in order to reinvent.
Mm-hmm.
And this takes a much more systematic approach. It identifies various aspects within an organization, such as product or service, process, sales and distribution, communication, and even corporate culture, and breaks them down one at a time and talks about some very specific ways to drive reinvention. And so what we're learning is that the best leaders, the most successful companies, the ones that enjoy ongoing and sustainable success, they reinvent early and often. And this book is sort of a roadmap on how to do just that.
Well, you use one key word there, Josh, that I think some people are kind of going, and that is the notion of disrupting being good, because it's kind of like counterintuitive, I think, in many and it goes the wrong way for traffic on a one-way street for a lot of people's thinking, because, well, wait a minute, disruption means stirring things up and twisting things around. Well, how did you decide that was a good thing to do?
Well, it's not only my decision. That's what's playing out in our turbulent times. You know, today we live in a world of dizzying speed and exponential complexity,
right.
Of course, fueled by ruthless competition. And what's happening is that no matter how successful we become, none of us can crack the code and prevent innovation from happening around us. In fact, the rate of change is happening today at a rate like none other in history. So it's the responsibility, really, of leaders, of people at all levels of the organization, to proactively disrupt. In other words, disrupt or be disrupted. It's funny, there's a funny saying in the business lexicon about, you know, cannibalization. You don't want to cannibalize your business.
Right.
And to me, that's such a silly thing, because if you don't cannibalize it, somebody else will.
Somebody else has got the knife and fork out.
And whoever does is going to be successful, right?
That's exactly right. So a much better approach is to flip it upside down and, in fact, to be the cannibal. I'd argue that there will be a company that comes along and puts you out of business. Might as well be you.
Yep.
And
hey,
similarly with careers. You know, people are always looking to get ahead in their career, you can't just rest on one point of success. At the very point of your highest success is exactly the time to be disruptive and reinventing it.
That's when you've got kind of the leisure to do it. Josh Linkner is our guest here. Josh, can you give us some examples, practical examples, of the kind of thing you're talking about, this kind of disruptive mentality that leads towards reinvention from some businesses, perhaps, or some other aspects of life here that we might understand?
Sure. I mean, the classic example of failure to disrupt is Polaroid. So Polaroid was the instant photography leader for 50 years.
Mm.
And instead of proactively taking that incredible resources and momentum that they had, they became stale and stagnant. And as a result, you know, Instagram and Tumblr and everybody else just whizzed right past them.
Yeah.
And the company ultimately succumbed to bankruptcy. And, of course, that happened to, you know, Pan Am Airlines and Oldsmobile and so many other brands that we once knew and loved. On the other hand, right here in our hometown, you look at the incredible work that's happening at General Motors. I mean, General Motors was the poster child, if you will, for bureaucracy and, you know, self-entitlement and felt they were untouchable. And, of course, they suffered greatly. But today, despite some you know, current bumps in the road, the company is really doing a tremendous job of reinventing itself. It went from needing a government bailout to building $27 billion in cash reserves. So this doesn't happen by accident. It happens by leaders willing to confront conventional wisdom, defy tradition, and ultimately stick a finger in the eye of complacency.
Now, let's stick with the current GM situation then. When you've got a tragedy, if you will, happens, that the new leader steps in there, Mary, and suddenly she's confronted with this mess in front of her. Could that turn into, do you think, a point of disruption that could lead to a bigger and better GM? And how?
I think it's going to, you know, it's sending the alarm bells appropriately, and I think that Mary and her leadership team are going to clean house and make sure that, you know, that the ball isn't hidden as it was in the past. It sort of, to me, this symbolizes the last little bit of the old GM, and I think that this will be an important milestone where they make a sharp left turn and start creating anew. It's funny, growing up in Detroit, I would always hear people at GM at all levels that I met, and they would refer to the company, they'd say they or them. And now I finally hear people saying us and we that work at that organization. So I believe that a change is underway. I'm very optimistic, not only about General Motors and Ford and others in the auto industry, but about the incredible revitalization that's happening in our city as we diversify the economy and make it an attractive place to work, live, and play for young people as well.
Yeah, well, and go ahead.
As I'm looking, scanning the book here, you not only talk about these big disruptive moves, but you're talking about sometimes things that are maybe, they're truly reinventing, but you're inventing something smaller. So it can be a lot of little steps too, can it?
I'm glad you said that. That's such an important point because the word reinvention even can be intimidating, and one might feel, gosh, if I don't completely reinvent every aspect of my business or life, then I'm failing. And it's not like that at all. In fact, most big breakthroughs are the result of lots of little experiments that often fail, by the way, and you learn and you adapt and evolve. And then ultimately the success of many small things lead to bigger breakthroughs. So what I want to really reinforce to listeners and readers is that reinvention isn't something that's inaccessible. In fact, it's the opposite. It's available to each of us if we take a very systematic and disciplined approach.
What have been the reinvention points in your life, Josh Linkner?
Well, from a career standpoint, I started my career as a jazz musician. And I played real traditional jazz guitar, reinvented myself to become a tech entrepreneur, built and sold 4 tech companies over the last 20 years, then reinvented myself again and became a venture investor and an author. So, and who knows what the next chapter may be. So, it's funny when I meet people, and by the way, to be clear, I've failed many times too. I've had all kinds of setbacks and screw-ups. So it's not that this is something that is only for a select few. Mm-hmm. Each of us really have within our grasp a wide opportunity to reinvent.
Would you? I'm sorry. Just quick question, because we're coming up on a break shortly, and I want to talk about other things in just a little bit. Would you see a person like Elon Musk as being kind of a perfect example of what you're talking about?
Well, he certainly reinvented tremendously, but other people have in a less dramatic way, but still made a huge difference in their lives and their communities.
Yeah, I was talking about the man who has Tesla Motors and has got a space program going. Hey, when we come back, I want to talk about how you became the kind of guru that you are. Josh Linkner is our guest here. We've had him on a number of times before, and are delighted to have him right now. So stay tuned to the Internet Advisor. More with Josh Linkner in a moment. It's our pleasure to be talking with Josh Linkner, who has been with us on other occasions here on the Internet Advisor. Delighted to have him back again. And by the way, if you go to internetadvisor.net, our homepage, you'll see lots of information about his books, both Disciplined Dreaming, his first bestseller on the New York Times bestselling list, and his current one, The Road to Reinvention, How to Drive Disruption and Accelerate Transformation. Josh, I have to tell you, however, that for me, one of the biggest benefits you brought to my life over the past couple of years have been your daily, the email links that I get, and I think they also appear in the free press as well. How did you get so smart?
Geez, I don't know about that. I'm quite the opposite. I think there's so many more smart people out there. I just try to simplify things. And, you know, we live in a world of incredible complexity, and sometimes synthesizing it down into something that is easy for we normal folk to understand is really the key to communication.
Well, Josh, I think the real key, because I do the same thing. Foster and I were comparing notes here off during the commercial, and I quote you from your columns and from your first book. And the reason I do is because it's easy to understand. Yep. You put it in simple terms and simple terms to remember. People can get it. You can tell them a few things. So I have people repeating those terms back to me now and to know where they came from. I'm not even sure if they knew or remember where they came from, but it's helped. So thank you. And I'm sure a lot of other people have the same experience.
That's so nice of you to say. I mean, honestly, the reason I write in both the free press and books and the like is to make a difference in people's lives. I mean, you know, certainly we can measure success in a lot of ways, but to me, it's about the impact that you make. And if I can provide an insight that is helpful to people and makes people, you know, see things more clearly or provides a new opportunity, boy, that's what you look back and feel great about.
Well, you know, when I saw Scott Dorsey's comment about who is the CEO and co-founder of Exact Target, and he talks about how you offer a clear process for ongoing creative disruption. And then I look in the book and I see tools for transformation, six habits for reinvention. And you talk about, you know, some simple things like weekly planning. But then you go on and explain why that's so important and how you do it and how you do it really to help, you know, drive kind of that creative reinvention that you talk about, and reflection and learning and gratitude. These are great, great concepts.
Thanks so much. I mean, the thing that's, you know, such a myth about creativity is that it's only for a few people. Like, mm-hmm. 1 out of 1,000 lucky people have a lightning bolt at birth, and the rest of us have to suffer. The research says otherwise. The research says that creativity, in fact, is 85% learned behavior. And so when you really boil it down, what that means is that all of us have this incredible gift. That's the one thing that levels the playing field. You know, that's the has really become the currency of success. It's the one thing that can't be outsourced. And it's our one source of sustainable competitive advantage, whether you're talking about a business, a community, or a career. So to me, the message isn't one of, oh, you have to be some, you know, crazy wizard genius. It's that all of us, no matter what our backgrounds may be, have an opportunity to drive meaningful change in the positive way by deploying our own gift of human creativity.
I'm curious how you went from being a jazz guitarist, which is not it's a nonverbal kind of thing, to being somebody who has got this ability to synthesize things and express them, as Gary was saying, so succinctly. How did you make that jump? Or was it a jump?
Well, funny enough, I mean, jazz music was a wonderful business teacher for me. Because
really?
The elements of a jazz combo are very much like what we face in the business world every day. You have to improvise. You have to move forward in the face of ambiguity. You have to make tough decisions. You have to go out on a limb. Sometimes you're taking a leading role, and other times it's about listening and supporting others. And so, ironically, even though, you know, using words instead of notes, it was a very easy transition, and the things that I learned playing music really enabled me to win in the business world. It's funny, I think more and more of that is happening. I've heard people say that MFA, the Masters of Fine Arts, is the new MBA. In an era where many quote-unquote hard skills have become commoditized, this type of innovative thinking is the thing that makes individuals and organizations really stand out and prosper.
And that ability to think outside the box.
Yeah, you know, and Josh, I know that you're a big proponent of STEM, scientific, technology, engineering and math, and the way we teach our kids today. But a lot of people are talking about STEAM and adding arts education in there as well. And that's what you're talking about, aren't you?
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I'm really concerned about the educational system, not because of teachers. I mean, teachers are heroes, but we live in a system that's so outdated. And all this business about teach to the test and no kid getting left behind,
What's
happening is that all our kids get left behind when they're not learning how to think creatively and how to solve problems without an operating manual. And so to me, I think it's one of the most important challenges of our day. Funny story about that, you know, I used to love Legos as a kid. And I would get a box of Legos, and there were all these random pieces. And the act of Legoing was to build something with your imagination. A couple years ago, I built a Lego Death Star project with my son, Noah, who's now 16. And instead of using your imagination, there was literally a phone book thickness operating manual that told us with 190 steps where to put every specialized piece. And to me, that concept is stunning. We're kind of going in the opposite direction. And what we really need to be doing is fostering the imagination and creative thinking.
Well, I think your book should be required reading for any high school student. And by the way, any student. And at age 50, I'm still a student.
Josh, who's listening to you in among the people who are putting the new Detroit together?
Well, you know, the new efforts in Detroit, I think for the first time that I can remember, certainly, are really, there's alignment and collaboration. And I'm so privileged to work with Dan Gilbert, who's playing a tremendous leadership role. I think Mayor Duggan is doing an outstanding job. I feel that, you know, we maybe had the perfect storm that was very negative and brought us down. It's almost like we're having the perfect sunshine, where we've got finally collaboration, we've got philanthropic organizations, the business community, the federal and state government, all aligned. And yeah, we're going to disagree at points on various tactics, but I think finally our city's heading in the right direction. I'm so optimistic, and I have a front row seat. I see it every day. I get calls from people, hey, I'm living in Boston. I used to live in Michigan. I want to come back. I hear what's happening there. And we're seeing this reverse migration right in Central Business District. We have 99% residential occupancy.
Wow.
Developers can't bring on product fast enough to meet demand. So it is an exciting time in the city of Detroit, and I truly believe we'll be looking back at this 5-year stretch as the greatest turnaround story in American history.
It's interesting you mentioned that, Josh. I was talking to a young restaurateur yesterday, and he has his eye on coming back into the central city, but he's having a hard time finding a place to get in because, and he has a wonderful, place called Fuego Grill, which is out in East Dearborn. It's a Mexican restaurant, but superb food. And we were talking about, he's having a hard time finding a place to fit in downtown because the properties are all becoming so precious down there.
Well, the good news is that there's a lot of development. I mean, Capitol Park, for example, which, you know, most of those storefronts are still vacant. You know, hundreds of millions of dollars are being poured into it. That's going to be an arts-type district, and hopefully our friends at Fuego will come join the fun. But I think that any slowdown isn't that it's all gobbled up. It's just temporary. You know, you have to rebuild a city that had fallen so low one step at a time. But again, I'm so optimistic. I mean, I see it in the faces of the young entrepreneurs that we back that are passionate about change, that are passionate about making a difference, and they see a real opportunity to not only make money but to make a difference. And that do well and do good concept is alive and well in Detroit.
Well, you know, one of the attributes that you talk about in your book is grit. And when you think about what we have here, and you know, we started with these great entrepreneurial companies many years ago that have now become big companies. We've got this same thing happening again with a lot of entrepreneurial companies that really have, and that grit is kind of in their blood. They know how to persevere.
Well, you couldn't have said it better. It's funny, I have the opportunity to interact with entrepreneurs all over the country and venture capitalists all over the country. And I'll tell you, we in Detroit maybe have a couple disadvantages, but the one advantage that we have in that's plentiful is that grit, the sense of purpose, of drive, of resiliency, of perseverance. And I'll put one Detroit entrepreneur against 10 in Silicon Valley, and I think we'll win every time.
Yep,
because
I agree.
Well, they're drinking their mocha frappuccino lattes. We're doing the hard work of building real companies.
We're taking it with skim milk. If you were outside looking at coming into Detroit, what are some of the other things that would say to you, this is a great place to take a chance on something?
You know, it's cool. We've had entrepreneurs move their companies here for the opportunity. And I really think that this is the best place in the country to build a great entrepreneurial company. You know, we know now that you don't need a Silicon Valley zip code to have a great tech firm. And when you compare and contrast, we have, you know, far lower costs for real estate, far lower costs for talent, much more plentiful talent, really, when you think about the far fewer number of companies competing for that talent. We have access to media. We have a great airport. We're centrally located. And the very act of being in Detroit as an entrepreneur is one of entrepreneurial spirit and almost defiance. In other words, it's very easy to follow the herd and get lost in the shuffle in Silicon Valley or Boston. But a Detroit entrepreneur, just the fact that they chose Detroit, to me really speaks to the grit and the entrepreneurial spirit that it takes to build a great company. So, well, you know, Silicon Valley, we celebrate the great work that's happened in the past.
Sure.
I think that the new flag is going to rise from the city of Detroit. And we're going to look at this region once again, just like we did 100 years ago, as a beacon of opportunity and innovation.
Yeah, last question for you. By the way, we've been talking with Josh Linkner, who is the author of a number of books. This most recently came out called The Road to Reinvention, How to Drive Disruption and Accelerate Transformation. What's your next biggest challenge?
Well, I want to spread the message about reinvention, that it's something that we can all embrace. And other than that, you know, being heads down in the incredible revitalization of Detroit, I'm so proud of the work that's happening all around me. It's fun to play a small role in it. And for any of us to have the opportunity, the privilege, to leave our fingerprints on the turnaround of a great American city, it's a responsibility, but an incredible opportunity. So I just feel so fortunate to be able to make a difference in my hometown.
Thanks, Josh. It's time in our program to talk with Mr. Mike Brennan, who is the editor and publisher of Michigan Technology News, MI Tech News, which is a free service that we'll talk about more in just a moment. But first of all, let's welcome Mr. Brennan. How you doing, sir?
Wonderful. I'm sitting on the back deck, just finished a Cohiba. You know, once we get done here, I'll probably have an adult beverage. Life is good.
I tell you, you folks in West Michigan, get all that sand out there in the water. Well.
It's God's country, Boston.
We've got a bit of that here on the east side of the state as well.
At least it's sunny.
Well, let's talk about some of the headlines that you've got out there to let people know a little bit about MI Tech News. And, folks, that's why we go through these headlines, is to give you a little flavor of the kind of things, the breadth of things that you'll find in MI Tech News. Free, delivered to your email address every week. Mike, let's talk about what the headline I saw caught my eye was Michigan's legislature drops the ball, a major road fix program.
Yeah, I try to stay out of politics mostly because it's like a landmine field for me, you know. But this I'm weighing in on this because I drive all over the state. And Southeast Michigan is by far the worst roads, I mean, because of all the traffic. But, yeah, unfortunately, nothing's going to happen. everybody's afraid they're not going to get reelected this fall or something or other, and then you got these real hardcore element in the in the legislature that doesn't want to raise any taxes whatsoever, and they came up with three or four plans. All of them were pretty good, but didn't go anywhere.
They decided to walk away from that and take their summer vacation. Heaven help us.
I guess.
All right, another title, another headline here was Automation Alley and Grand Circus are hosting a hackathon on July 11th. That should make Ed happy. He's an old hacker.
Yeah, well, it's a 24-hour hackathon. They're going to build an app for the Detroit Public Library.
Oh.
And the winners are going to get some kind of cash prize. They haven't really set out much yet. But seating is limited to 100, and registration closes July 9th, so it's 3 weeks away or so. So if you got to get in quick, because that 100 seats are going to go fast. So.
By the way, that's a good example of the kind of headline, folks, that you'll find on MI Tech News, where it's not just about things that are happening in the news, but opportunities that you have as well.
Well, and the nice thing is Mike really knows a lot of these people, like the Grand Circus folks, and what they're doing for you know, for Southeast Michigan, but all of Michigan, really, and the Midwest. And, you know, Mike really can get to the bottom of and to the story behind the headlines.
And we were just talking in the break, Mike. We have been talking with Josh Linkner, who is a jazz musician.
And Mike knows very well.
Yeah, and
yeah, I was listening. So.
And it was interesting to hear the whole notion of how people coming from very different approaches, like hackers, can actually really help the state business environment, do things a different way. Step out of the box and do things in a different way. Hey,
well,
Mike, let's go ahead.
They certainly think differently.
Yep.
I mean, I know I'm very familiar with how they operate, and they're getting very, very good. So,
it's an excellent example, folks, of the kind of things you'll find at MI Tech News if you follow with it on it every week. You'll find a hard news item like about Michigan's legislature, and then you'll also find things like opportunities that are out there for you to go to a special meeting. Venture capitalists who are looking for businesses to support out there, or networking opportunities for you if you happen to be a business person. All of that kind of thing is in MI Tech News.
And, you know, I saw one here, Mike, where you're talking about the registration is now open for the Michigan Cyber Luncheon Series, June 25th here in Detroit.
It is. That's a really good one. It's kind of a mini version of the annual one that we all went to, in October, I think.
That's right. And that sold out quickly, and this one will probably do the same, right?
Yeah, anybody, I mean, it's moving so fast now. Anything to do with cybersecurity, it's hard to keep up with because it's measures and countermeasures, and everybody's getting really good at this. So if you don't have your head in the game, you're going to have a lot of problems.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. A lot of problems.
Well, that futuristic novel about cyber stiletto that you and Richard Stephen wrote.
All the stuff we wrote about 3 years ago
is coming to pass. Yeah, it's all true now.
It's kind of scary. We can't call it a futuristic novel anymore. It's the real thing. It's happening out there. Well, folks, if you want to get in on these kind of headlines delivered to you every Friday, absolutely free, and there's many, many more headlines that are there, plus contacts, you'll find also our podcasts are there. You can have access to them through MI Tech News, and also some special interviews that are done. You'll have access to them as well. And serialization of the Cyber Stiletto book is on there as well. So lots of things coming to you absolutely free. And how do you get hold of that? Simply go to internetadvisor.net, scroll down the page, and you'll see Mike's smiling face there, and hit the subscribe button. And it'll just require of you your email address and permission to send you those headlines free for nothing. So please do that today, internetadvisor.net, and just hit the subscribe now button. Let's wrap things up here with somebody, Gary, that you and I have had on the air here with us before. Matter of fact, his offices were right near me in Royal Oak. Livio's founder, Jake Siegel, is going to be giving the keynote at the GLEQ Business Plan Awards on June 17th, coming up very quickly.
That's right.
Yeah, and this year Diane's done a new wrinkle. She's got it at Eagle Crest the morning of the Michigan Growth Capital Symposium starting. And in the afternoon, there'll be hundreds of venture capitalists and angel investors there. Probably some of those will filter in to observe the pitches by some of these companies. So that was a great stroke on the part of Diane, because normally she had that as a separate event in East Lansing, but not this year.
And so, by the way, that Eagle Center is beautiful out there in Ypsilanti, just off of I-94. Mike, thank you so much for these headlines and many more, and for the opportunity for us to tell people about MITechNews.com, and simply go to internetadvisor.net and hit that subscribe button for free. You get all that delivered to you on Fridays. Mike, thanks, and have a great weekend.
I'll do my best. Thanks, guys.
Hey, thanks,
all
Mike.
Right, Mike. Thank you very much. Hey, Ed, you were mentioning before about how it made sense that musicians will be the kind of people to do the innovation before. And I just realized, you and Talon are musicians. Did that ring with you?
It did, and I think it's because, I'm not sure why, but I think we think differently than other people. And I can't say that. We have a creative side to us, and I express mine through fixing things and building things and in the computer environment. And I tend to approach things differently than I found many of my coworkers do. Well, and Talon, I found, is doing the same thing as well. And I'm wondering if a lot of these people with these artistic backgrounds, aren't just going to trample over all the people that have gone through traditional business training, our guest said.
Well, and I think with musicians, you have to be creative, especially jazz musicians, right? But any musician, you have to be creative, but you also have to be structured too,
yes.
Right?
Oh, yes.
And I think the two together somehow form this wonderful mix to allow you to be creative in the kind of way that works so well in computers.
Yeah. Absolutely. And in business. Yep.
I like the point that Josh made about, now, Gary, you have an MBA, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, he made a I didn't hear you wince or anything.
He was right.
Or shrink back. But he was talking about people with MBAs not being well-trained to dealing with business issues, but needing some of the unbalance, if you will, of somebody coming from a completely different approach, which would be the musicians.
Absolutely. And I will tell you that while I have an MBA, I taught entrepreneurship in the College of Engineering at the University of Michigan. Mm-hmm. And you did that because those were the guys that really knew something. And now it was to teach them how to build a company as opposed to just guys that wanted to be in business and didn't. Okay, so now what do I want to be in business to do? Right.
Boy,
and it was really interesting because the engineers, in some respects, and many of the people that found their way into entrepreneurship with an engineering degree were musicians.
That's so
side.
Interesting.
Absolutely fascinating. Yeah.
I have hope for my son.
All that money that's going in.
Hey, Foster, while we got a couple seconds, I didn't realize this, but Comcast has opened up their Netfinity routers in Houston for public Wi-Fi. So 150 subscribers, 150,000 home users. Comcast has been working with them to open up their Wi-Fi networks to Netfinity users that are traveling with their mobile devices or computers so that it's free Wi-Fi for Netfinity subscribers.
Wow.
And it will not impact their home wireless speeds at all. And the home users have the ability to opt out if they choose that.
This is Netfinity?
Yeah, Comcast, Netfinity.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. Well, folks, there's something to look
hopefully
into.
That's a future to come. What a way to spread free internet.
Very
interesting.
They got to do something to give back to the users. All right, folks, here's the time for you to call and get your questions in. We're going to take a news break. When we come back on the other side of that, call 800-859-0957, 800-859-0957. And Ed and Gary and I will be sitting here waiting to answer your questions. Looking forward to your call at 800-859-0957.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor. To see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at www.internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, plus other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage and send us an email with the details. Don't forget to look for us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor.
Hello there, this is Foster Brown. Welcome to the program, the second hour, which is your hour. What does that mean? That means that you set the whole conversation here with your questions. And you can do it by calling 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0957. If you're within the sound of my voice and hear those phone numbers, you dial that right now. Get in line, and Joy from Southfield will be with you in just a moment to start helping our listeners. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor, the second hour of our program, Your Hour. That's when you get to call in with your questions at 800-859-0957. Now, we do know that we have affiliate stations where our programs are heard at other times and our live show, obviously. And we want to make you aware of the fact that you can also send your questions in. There is a Contact Us button at the top of our toolbar on our homepage at internetadvisor.net. If you click on that, You can just simply put in your email address and the other identifiers that they ask for there, which are kept completely private, and then put your question in there. And we have a number of them in there. And during the week, I'll answer some, Ed will answer some, Cal will answer some, but we spread them out among ourselves, and we get answers for you on those as well. So please, if you're listening to us on one of our affiliates and can't call in directly right now, we do take your questions and answer them as quickly as we can.
And, you know, Foster, we don't get paid any more for answering the WJR listener questions than we do anybody. Okay, so we don't get paid for any of it. But no more.
No more. You're right. Absolutely. Very, very well put. Okay, let's get to answering some questions and say hello to Jay from Southfield. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. Jay, how can we help you?
Hi, Foster. First, I want to tell you, you guys got a great program, and I listen as often as I can.
Well, thanks, Jay.
I just bought a brand new Toshiba laptop. I've only had it a couple of days.
Okay.
And I turned it on today, and I was and it's got 8.1 on it, which is driving me nuts. But
you're talking about Windows 8.1. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was playing around with it, and I clicked on Internet Explorer and opened a bunch of tabs.
Mm-hmm.
And on one of the tabs, I then proceeded on the address bar to type in a URL of a store. And that little round blue ball was whirring around for a while. And I figured that it was never going to get to the website. So I figured I'd go to another tab.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I went to another tab, and when I did this, I went in the upper left-hand corner. I was going to close this one out.
Right, right.
And I tried to close it out, but my pointer froze, and I get this little, I'm not using a mouse, I'm using the touchpad.
Yep.
And in the upper left-hand corner of the touchpad, I get this little white icon that looks like a circle with a line through it, like, don't do this or something.
Yeah,
and my pointer's frozen,
frozen.
I couldn't move it. So what I did, finally, to get out of there, I pressed the Control plus C and got the Charms thing.
Yep.
And then I used the keypad on the right side, all numerics, paged up and down, till I could get the power and then get to shut the darn thing off. And then I pressed the power button back on again. I was fine for a minute till I put the pointer over. I was going to go back to Internet Explorer.
Mm-hmm.
When I put the pointer over there, the white light came on.
Oh,
the whole
dear.
Thing froze again, and there I'm at.
All right, Kate. Now, I'm going to suppose that, Jay, is this the first time you've used a Windows 8.1 or Windows 8?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would suggest to you, since you've only had it a couple of days, you might want to look for a simple tutorial. Ed, can you think of any good places to go for a tutorial? Did we put any up? I'm trying to think.
No, I don't think we did.
Go ahead. While you're talking.
I was going to say Microsoft has a number of tutorials on Windows 8.
And some others that are pretty good as well.
Yeah.
And YouTube, too, I'm sure, would have them as well.
Yeah.
There's a number of series out there, but I'll have to look. Now, I'm curious about this icon. Is it a little light on the top left-hand corner of your touchpad that is glowing?
Yeah, it lights up white. And it's,
with a line through it.
With a line through it, and it looks to the left of it in the same icon, it looks like a gasoline pump or something.
No kidding.
Hmm.
Now,
yeah.
The only thing I could think of, one of the things I could think of is my daughter's Sony. I'm not sure about Toshiba, and maybe one of our listeners could help me, but she has the ability to shut off her touchpad by clicking on and it's hidden. You really cannot see it. Their young eyes can see it, but it's basically a dot in the top left-hand corner of their touchpad that turns on and off the touchpad. I'm suspecting.
I'm beginning to think that might be it because the whole thing is frozen there.
Yeah.
Right. So, but as you discovered, your keys probably work. So that probably means your laptop isn't frozen. It's possible that your mouse is frozen. If you were to hook up an external mouse, it may work. I'm suspecting that your touchpad or your glide point area is disabled. And it just, I'm hoping it's a coincidence that as you are stroking your mouse over to the left or your fingertip over to the left-hand side of the screen to launch Internet Explorer, that you may be taking your fingertip and going to that top left-hand corner and disabling your touchpad.
Well, okay, so how do I enable it?
I believe you just double tap on the top left-hand corner again of your mouse pad.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't had a chance to look to see if the I know HP has this, Sony Vaio has this, and but I'm not sure if the Toshiba laptops have the ability to enable.
Gee, let me go back to something I said before.
Sure.
I think it's important for you and other people who are listening. Windows 8.1, and by the way, you want that, folks, because that is the best one. That's taking care of a lot of the problems people struggle with Windows 8. You want to find a tutorial. Now, I believe, Gary, you said before that Microsoft offers some tutorials for Windows 8.1.
And YouTube.
And YouTube as well.
That was Ed's suggestion.
Jake, if you have to go to somebody else's computer, get one of those so you get some of the basics down. Because as you were talking, I had like three notes that I took on things you could have done that would have saved you a whole lot of problems. And that's because I've been using Windows 8.1 now for over a year. So I would, before you do anything else, if you can, get to somebody else's computer, go to the library and find a tutorial on YouTube or at Microsoft
on how to use it.
Now, I'm going to have to put you on hold because we're going to take a break.
But hold on.
But hang on. We'll be right back to talk to you some more and to the rest of you here. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Ed Riddell. As you heard them say, I want to do a couple of things, Gary and Ed, before we go on. And Paul Sr. is with us from Houston, Texas. I'll be get with him, his new home. And
Bill, we can ask him about that Comcast article we read.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Bill from Maybe, we'll get to you as well. And for the folks out there who are willing to call in right now, 800-859-0957, we'll get back with you in just a second. A couple of things. This past week, on Tuesday of this past week, Microsoft downloaded a huge update. It was the 8.1 update, and it wasn't minor. It wasn't a few little fixes. It was a huge update. So if you've experienced some problems with your computer with a Windows 8 since then, it may be some of the things that are happening with Windows 8. And I would have one question for you, and Ed, we were talking about this. Have you turned your computer off and back on? What happens when you do that, Ed, after one of these massive downloads?
You know, we have configured the computer. I've configured mine to download and install automatically.
Yep.
Well, apparently, although it may do part of it, it certainly says, when I shut down, would you like to install this these updates that Microsoft...
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, yeah, I told you that, like... 3 months ago.
Right.
Just do it automatically.
And like Gary said, I just find myself with Windows 8. It is so easy for me just to shut the lid, go to standby, pop. It's just so fast.
Yes.
And it's been actually a couple of weeks since I've rebooted my computer. How long am I going to... I was on my way to the show. How long do I have to wait to shut down my computer before I, you know, come to the show?
So it's become a very important thing now, I think, with Windows 8.1. And that is, by the way, the operating system you ought to be on because they've updated some very important things. But it's become important. And I don't understand this either, Ed, that you shut down the computer or restart the computer. Because what will happen is, as you're shutting it down, it says, hey, hang on, we're installing some updates. And then when it reboots, it says, don't touch your computer because we're updating some things, and it does more of that process on the front end of the reboot.
Mm-hmm.
And you won't get some very important updates until you do that. And it's maddening, but that's the way it works.
Yeah.
But they don't want to update something while you're trying to do something else.
Could be. Could very
right?
well be.
Because I like to let them go ahead and do it in the background, the problem is...
Oh, I see what you're saying. Just kind of override that, yeah.
Right. So should they shut it down? Well... they could shut it down and do that automatically for you, but what if you're taping something? What if you have a big
one of my beefs
something going?
They don't give you an opportunity, for instance, to say, at 3 o'clock in the morning, do this for me.
But I might have antivirus scan running at that time. Mm.
Or whatever the time. I mean, you can figure it out.
But you know what I'm saying.
I know what you're saying. Yeah.
So that's I think they tried they're trying to let you have more control.
Yeah. In this particular case,
it didn't. We don't want that control, eh?
It's a change, and we're just not used to it, I think.
So listen to this, folks. If you make sure you reboot your computer occasionally. And by the way, especially since last Tuesday, which was a major patch update, and that's when that operating system update came on. All right, Paul Sr. in Houston, Texas, deep in the heart of Texas. How you doing, buddy?
Terrific, wonderful, marvelous. Trying to stay cool.
Now, that may be an impossibility ever again since you're living in Houston, Texas, Paul.
I get up in the morning and take the dog out by 8 o'clock and it's already 74 degrees.
You better be in the air conditioning after that.
Oh, God, yes.
Now, Paul, you on the notes here, it says that you're going to have something to tell us about the Xfinity Wi-Fi experience.
Like you guys had mentioned, it's a great plan. It's wonderful. What they want to do, I think they're going to put it into like 50, 55,000 homes down here. They want to make Houston a hotspot Wi-Fi area.
Mm-hmm.
they claim is the key word, it will not affect your upload-download speeds.
Mm-hmm.
It will not be hacked. Anything you currently have will also still be private.
Right. It completely separates home traffic from traffic on the Wi-Fi network that
so
it's sharing to the
what
public.
What is this thing? How is it different from anything that's going on right now? Maybe you can explain that.
Well, right now, I mean, the Wi-Fi is dedicated to you, and then when you work with Comcast, they give you this special password to connect to your own home wireless. What Comcast is doing with this special modem, the most recent modem that they're updating, is the users will have a dedicated connection and a private connection to their home Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. But they've also opened up a free Wi-Fi channel.
But your modem then becomes a hotspot for a whole bunch of other people.
Exactly. You and your neighbors and their two friends and so on and so on and so on. And so you could pretty much drive your car through most of Houston, theoretically, and have a Comcast connection with you and not use up your cellular charges, if you will, for your data charges on your cellular provider.
Now I understand what it is. Wow. Paul, do you have that in your home?
We have Xfinity, Comcast, whatever you want. First, I believe, is the word.
Yeah.
And you have the option with them of opting out of this.
Oh.
If you don't want to become a hotspot.
Yeah. What are you thinking of doing, Paul?
Opting out.
Really? Why?
I don't know. There's so many different things going on with all these different breaches of security and stuff.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
What would it take? You know, it's like, let me tell you the one about the fat man and the flying reindeer, okay? this is how I look at it.
Well, Paul brings up a good point. A lot of things people have told us they've said are safe. Do online internet transactions and purchase our goods from our commodities online. It's safe. Well, look what happens. You know, people are
Target.
You
Target.
Know, but it's safe.
Yeah.
You know, so I could see your caution there.
Yeah,
it's going to happen. There's going to be identity theft because you know you get a MasterCard application with checks in the mail. Somebody lifts it. You know, they've already got
yes.
your identity
yes.
and run
yes.
up the bill.
Well, in this particular case, though...
I don't think that's going to happen
I don't think it's going to happen with this particular thing. You'll get a unique code, which will let you then access the Comcast system through your own hotspot and any other that you happen to run into. And that unique code will always be recognized in Houston as... This is Paul Sr. as he travels
right.
around.
That none of the public's internet traffic will actually make it to your home wireless. I mean, one of the things they're doing is they have a new modem, and the newer wireless routers that they have support the ability for multiple channels. So one channel is dedicated to you, the other channels are dedicated to the public, but you get the priority. You get the priority connection.
Here's another kicker with that, though, is that up until this moment, you can go to the store and buy a modem
mm-hmm.
that's compatible to them.
Give
them the old one and save yourself $7-$8 a month.
That's right.
So now, I don't know if you're going to be able to do that.
No, probably not. I would not.
Well, you probably could, but then you wouldn't be able to participate in this plan. I don't know.
I got to wait and see some more. But
I think
just wanted to let you guys know.
No, that's good. Thank you for... go ahead.
It was in the local paper down here earlier this week, and I wish I would have kept it.
Paul, for us and for the other listeners who are on right now, since this is kind of an experiment and it's being run in your backyard. By the way, for those of you who don't know, Paul Sr. has been one of our faithful listeners for, oh my word, I don't know how many years, and you were up in Harbor Beach, right?
I used to be in Harbor Beach.
Harbor Beach, up in the thumb of Michigan, and suffering the cold, cold winters up there and the ruthless blasts of cold off of Lake Huron. He decided, that's it.
That's it. Done.
He's down. Now he's down in a bigger body of water, the Gulf of Mexico.
Don't they have bigger storms down there, Paul?
Yeah, they're called hurricanes.
They have thunderstorms, and they'll tell you they're going to get one, but then it misses you. It's really spotty, but we do have hurricanes.
Yeah.
I would tell you, I'd rather rake leaves in January than shovel snow.
All right, Paul. Thank you so much for calling us on that particular point. And we will pay attention. And as you experience this down there in Comcast territory in Houston, where they're doing this experiment, folks, where you'll have a modem put on your house that will be not only for connecting you to the internet, but then a number of other people within the reach of that modem will have their own special code to get in. They can't get into your channel, but we'll get into their own channels on that hotspot, and be, if they're even just driving by, be able to get the benefit of Comcast's speed and throughput down there.
Right. 500,000 people already have the modems installed in the Houston area, and what Comcast has done is they've already enabled 50,000 of them. They're gonna this week or next week they're gonna enable another 100,000.
All right,
and then the users have the option to opt out.
Hey, Paul W, let us know how things go down there. Okay, I should say
okay,
Paul
happy
Senior.
Father's Day.
Hey, thank you too. Yes, that's right. Happy Father's Day, Paul Senior. All right, Bill from Maybe, we'll be with you in just a moment. And hey, great time for you folks out there to call too. 800-859-0957. About that time of the program to salute the folks behind the grass. Grass.
Oh, my, what a slip.
What are they smoking? No, I'm sorry. Glass. G-L-A-S-S. Annie Nichols, good to have you back, by the way. Our lady of the phones is here. And Rich Lisinski, who's our engineer. Thank you so much for being around. Tongue tied. Hey, just a quick, I was telling the guys here in the studio about this, and I'm going to tell the rest of you folks. If you haven't seen it yet, now, fair warning, there's some very rough language and some pretty harsh acting in this thing as well. But there's a new series out called Halt and Catch Fire, which, Ed, I've heard is a DOS command. I have to look it up, but they said there's a DOS command which will essentially stop the computer and then just, like, delete everything that's on it. I don't know if that's...
Huh?
Yeah, that's what it said, I thought.
Okay. I have to look at the series.
Hollywood said that? Yeah. It's probably on the internet. And, of course, they can't say anything that isn't
true.
Well,
in this particular case, they know they'd have all sorts of geeks out there tearing them apart for it. Anyway, it's on AMC, and it's called Halt and Catch Fire, and I believe it's on Sunday nights. But anyway, go to amctv.com and look for it, Halt and Catch Fire. Let me know what you think. I'm beginning. Our two guys here are going to take a look at it and see what they
think. It takes place in the 80s, you said, right?
Yeah, in the 80s in Texas's Silicon Valley, and it's an upstart company that's trying to make PCs in the era of IBM's bigger frame computers.
Mm-hmm.
It was the
Sounds
challenge.
Like Dell.
Well, I think that may be what they're kind of playing at. I want you to see it and tell me what you see through it, okay? Bill from Maybe Michigan, thank you for your patience. How can we help you here on the Internet Advisor?
Good. I called you last weekend when I was telling you I was loading up iTunes onto the computer and this remote desktop took over. It called itself System, okay? Well, I've agitated this thing enough so much now that I got a lot of hours into it, then it's just like a challenge to me now. But now all I can, when I get on there and I light it up, on the left-hand side, it goes F2 for setup, F12 for debugging, or for reboot, okay? So I went on that, and when I say go on there and load my defaults on setup, okay, it reverts itself right back to its own little thing, okay, where it won't let me do anything. So I trick-bag this thing sometimes when I push an F8, and I can go into, like, safe mode.
Right, F8 is where you go into the safe mode, right, exactly.
Yeah, okay, and it looks like it's going to do this little thang-thang, okay? And it starts, but then it stops, okay? And it does nothing. It stalls right out. My question is, guys, that I don't have the disk, the installation disk with this computer, okay, that I got. Can I go someplace to a store and buy a disk? Well, I'll tell you another thing.
Wait, hang on.
One thing at a time. Okay. If I remember this conversation, you got the computer with Windows 7. Somehow it reverted back to Windows Vista.
Right.
During the show when we were talking about this, and even after we talked about this after you got off the phone or off the air with us, is we believe at some point you may have actually told the computer to reload the computer back to its factory image, which would have been Windows Vista. Apparently now the computer is at a point where you can't even get into Windows at all. So I wanted to clarify that. Is that the case right now? You cannot
get in the case that I've even installed some like for my Kodak cameras and other things that I need to upload onto the computer and it doesn't even recognize them.
Now hang on a second, Bill. Hang on, because we
okay. But the thing is, are you able to get into Windows at all right now?
Negative.
Okay. So you have a couple different choices. You could go to the manufacturer of the computer, which is probably Dell, because I think you said you press F12. You can go to them and you type in the model and serial number, or just the serial number that's on the bottom of the unit, and you have the ability to order the manufacturer installation CDs for that. And that would include the operating system, but the operating system will be Vista. Which you may or may not want. You could go to the store, I believe, and still buy a copy of Windows 7.
Yes.
And purchase that DVD and install it.
Now, right? We also said, Bill, that you got this from somebody who built this for you, was it? Is this a refurbished?
It's a refurbished unit.
Okay. Correct. And you got it from, what was a private computer shop?
Yes, that is correct. Yes.
Okay. One of the things we also suggested last week is you take it back to them and tell them, hey, guys.
I got time in this thing, man. It's a challenge for me now. It's a principle, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, okay. Now, hold it. But I understand you have time.
There's a timing thing, but you're at the point where the only way you can get this thing working again is purchasing an operating system, either from the manufacturer, Dell, or going to a store and purchasing Windows 7. I don't think you're going to be able to revive this thing on your own.
Right. And that's why, Bill, we're suggesting that you go back to the people who built this thing for you or refurbished it and say, look, I need the operating system that you put on here. That is one way. By the way, the very first computer I had built for myself, they put on a pirated operating system. And
right.
I ended up having problems. As a matter of fact, I think
it probably worked for the first week or two, and then it stopped working.
Exactly. And then Microsoft says, excuse me, this isn't legitimate. I had to go back to the guy and make him put on a legal copy of it. That may have happened to you. Or at very least, you should be able to go back to that shop and say, guys, I need the disks so that I can install this program again. Because you need to start from ground zero. I know you put a lot of time into it, and we certainly appreciate that. You're very brave to have done that. But please head back to that shop and see if you can get some help from them, because you certainly put the money into that.
And one of the things they could do is give him a copy of a restoration CD with that operation on there. They can make an image of it, because Windows 7 allows you to create a bootable image that does a restore. You know, so if he's taking it back, and he may have to pay for them to reload the operating system and with a license, he shouldn't have to because it should be underneath a 30-day warranty at least, then he could ask them, you know, for $10, can you create me a system image? Microsoft provides that ability. Yeah. There's nothing special about it.
I think this is where you need to go back to the shop and say, look, folks, come on. I'm not a
step up.
Step up to this and get this thing working for me again. All right, let's go to Jeff from East Point. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. Jeff, what can we do for you?
Guys, first I had some advice for the guy with Toshiba who just called in about touchpad locking up.
Yeah.
That happened to me on a Toshiba that I just bought, a notebook.
Mm.
And I was able to clear it by holding the Alt key and F5.
Alt F5. Okay.
I'm glad you said that because, I think I told him Function F5. So I'm glad you said that.
Alt F5. Okay.
Yeah, instead of Control, use Alt key.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you for that. All right. Your question is about, you have a question about antivirus software?
Yeah, I got antivirus software to install. First, I have to uninstall what came with it, Norton.
Okay.
And I'm wondering if when I put in the CD for the new antivirus, will it prompt me to uninstall then, or should I uninstall it first?
Ed?
Well, what antivirus did you purchase that required a CD?
Starts with a K.
So Kaspersky.
Oh, Kaspersky, yeah.
Yeah, probably, that's very good.
Very good, yeah.
You know what? If you're going to immediately uninstall Norton and then reinstall the other, well, you know what? You might want to install the Kaspersky first. And, you know, it's sort of hit and miss. If it was me, I would uninstall Norton because right now, you may have to uninstall a couple different products. So
you should be aware that if you want to pull out the Norton antivirus software, you're going to have a number of things. If you go into your control panel, for instance, that will be required, the update.
Yeah,
and there's two or three other ones.
Yeah, Norton Live Update or Symantec Live Update.
Now, if you go to the Norton website, they have an uninstaller. Am I right?
They do, but I typically don't use that, Foster, unless I'm having problems.
Okay, good point. So you should simply be able to go to your control panel and then go through there and uninstall anything that has the Norton. What's the other word we look for? Symantec, pardon me. Symantec. Symantec, which is the company that owns Norton. So you would take anything that's Symantec and anything that's Norton out of there through the control panel.
So just out of curiosity, how much did you pay for Kaspersky?
$40.
What kind of operating system do you have on your Toshiba?
It's Windows. It's probably 8.1.
Well, if it's Windows 8.1, I would... can you get your money back on Kaspersky?
I might be able to. Somebody
because
told me to go to Microsoft and download.
Well, you don't have to download anything. Here's the thing. Microsoft built into the Windows 8.1 operating system all of the stuff that was in Microsoft Security Essentials. Am I right on that, Ed? I'm pretty sure I'm right.
Yeah. That's what I'm looking for.
And then it also built in something called Windows Defender. So you have, and that's all free, and it's all part of the armor plating that is on Windows 8.1.
And I believe that when, after you uninstall Norton, because I believe I did this on my machine, the Lenovo I had, mm-hmm. I uninstalled, I think it came up with McAfee on this one, mm-hmm. that when I uninstalled it, Microsoft Windows 8 at the time basically said, you have no antivirus software installed on your computer. Would you like us to enable the native Windows 8 antivirus mm-hmm. software? I'm paraphrasing, but I believe that's what it did.
I believe that's what it does, yeah. So when you uninstall Norton, then it should you should be told then by the operating system, hey, would you like to enable the Microsoft security software? It will do that for you then. And you can save $40 that way. Now, Kaspersky, and I'm sorry, I shouldn't just out of hand maybe say this, but Kaspersky is great software. But until, maybe I'm wrong on this, Ed. What do you think, Gary? I think almost like until you have a problem, I wouldn't put belt and suspenders on. You've got...
Why? But, yeah, right.
Because, why spend $40?
Right, because the Microsoft...
Go to Microsoft and get security essentials. Now you're telling me it's already there.
Oh, yeah, it's been built in. With Windows 7, you needed to get it as an add-on. But okay. the genius of Windows 8.1, or Windows 8 and 8.1 subsequently, is that it built all that into it, which I think is genius on their part.
Well, they tried to build it in before, but the there was Justice Department wouldn't let them do that, right? So then they said, okay, we'll unbundle it. That would be fair. And now that so many other companies also have antivirus out there that they're able to bundle it now.
Yeah.
Under certain rules.
Okay. Does that help you, Jeff?
Yes.
All right, sir. Thank you very much for calling. Give us a chance to talk about something on Windows 8.1 that is one of the good points about it. It's very, very good security. Hey, when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about something that one of our past callers brought up about search on Windows 8. And we're not trying to sell Microsoft products here, but since a lot of people are running into it, we hope we can help you with it, as with anything else here on the Internet Advisor. We're almost out of time here, and Jordan will be with you. Or pardon me, Joanne will be with you in just a moment. I want to let the rest of you folks out there know that we have a phone line open for you yet. 800-859-0957. Get in line with us as soon as you can, okay? All right, Joanne from Hi. Concord, Ohio. How you doing?
Hi, it's me again. I hope I'm also a long-time dedicated listener, so hopefully you'll forgive me for calling maybe three times in the last 6 weeks.
No.
We'd love you to call.
So. Okay. And somehow I always end up at the tail end, no matter how hard I try. But I think this is going to be kind of a quickie for you.
Okay.
I did end up, I had called you and asked some advice about shopping for a computer. And
right?
I did end up with an iMac.
Oh, okay.
And I also purchased a copy of Windows 7. And I also... got the Parallels Desktop 9 software.
All right.
Software.
It's a virtual, for those who don't know about it, Parallels is a virtual machine. There's that one, and what's the other big one, Ed, besides Parallels?
Boot Camp
is the other one you can do with the Mac. Okay.
You can also use VMware.
VMware, that was the other one I was thinking. VMware Fusion. Okay, yes, go ahead.
Microsoft actually had a nice deal. There was, I think it was about $50 off if you purchased it along with the Apple machine.
Very good. So you have a lovely iMac there. What size, I'm curious?
Well, I got the entry level one, so $12.99, you know.
Good.
But,
beautiful machine.
I have not unpacked it yet.
Ah.
That's for this weekend.
Oh, Christmas, It's Christmas for July. You just have to wait one more week after that.
And I'm hoping my question isn't going to be a dumb one, but I know I have a lot to learn, and I'm up for the challenge, so I'm actually mm-hmm. looking forward to it. But mm-hmm. after I install the Windows, will I need to still do Windows updates? Or if I stay on the Mac side for all of my Internet work, do I not need to... Not need to worry about
no,
that.
No, you really need to update the Windows 7 as well.
Okay.
Yes, you will.
Okay.
Uh-huh. It won't automatically be that way. You do need to do that. Any kind of an operating system that you put in that virtual window, you need to update.
Yeah,
okay.
And you basically have two operating systems, two different pieces, two different software areas, operating systems that are on one computer. So you'll have to update both sides.
Now, Gary, I have a question. If she was to get the Office 365... Right?
Mm-hmm.
Per subscription. Mm-hmm. Does that give her a license for one Mac, one PC?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
five, I think.
So depends on which one you get.
Yeah,
but
yes,
I think you have, you know, that's a good office, question. Because office. We could put Macs and PCs on our family version,
mm-hmm.
and we have up to five.
Mm-hmm.
For $99.
Right.
For $79, you get one.
Right.
And I think it's one computer.
Uh-huh. And one tablet.
And one, and then that any tablet and yeah. phone that
exactly.
you want. So you can have mm-hmm. a number of those, but it's the one instance. So it
right.
connects back to the one
license that you have.
Well, so your one mailbox, for instance, and
yep.
whatnot. So
right.
I think you could put on both the Mac and the Windows computer.
Were you interested in putting in the Office product
yeah,
on your...
You know, actually, I still have one install left. I bought a three-copy disk of the Word program, so I still have one more.
So, which operating system are you going to put it on? The Mac or the Windows?
No. That's a really good question.
I would suggest you put it on the Mac side.
Okay.
Just
why?
because it'll function natively quick. So you won't have to go into the virtual machine to get to it.
That'd be my suggestion.
Okay.
Now I would also with your purchase of the new Mac, you also have a chance to take some classes.
Yeah.
At the Apple Store, I suggest if you're just getting into a Mac system. That you do that. Take that time.
I am going to. And you know what? It's kind of because I did purchase the computer at Micro Center, but I popped into the Apple Store.
Right.
And oh my, it was like I left there with just this huge smile on my face because
it was so wild and crazy.
It
is wild and crazy, but it's also a wonderful experience. They'll take time
to
treat you.
It was a blast just seeing everybody in there, really.
Well, good
really
for you.
It's a cult, yeah.
Yeah. It was fun.
Ed just got a Mac to use for work.
Okay.
Cal got him one. And
you just spread that over a 35-state area. Did you, Foster? Thank you.
No, because he's going to be able to speak with a forked tongue, too.
But in reality, I did do my research pretty thoroughly,
good.
And I really went for it more because I think it's going to really fit my needs.
Good. And good for you.
And I like the look of it, too. And, you know, that's all part of it when you spend hours and hours and hours in front of a computer.
It is.
You have to like what you're staring
at. And as you
said,
you started from the point of view of what you're going to do with it. That is really brilliant. Yeah. So get those classes, and then Joanne, let us know how it's going for you, okay?
Thank you so much, gentlemen.
Thank you, dear. I appreciate that. She is so cheery. Dean from Bloomfield Hills, we want to get you in before the show's over, so how can we help you?
Hi, guys. About 3-4 years ago, I was on a XP system, and you suggested a program is called the Ultimate Troubleshooter, which was great.
Yes.
It allowed you to load things up and take things off.
It was really cool.
But it kind of went away, and now I'm on Windows 7. I just wondered, is there any other follow-up program to that would allow me to do the same thing?
You know, I'm not sure, because I think that was written by a single gentleman, right? I'm trying to think.
Yes,
I'm trying to recall.
Right.
That was a number of years ago.
Right.
We don't know.
I don't know. That is interesting. I have not.
Because it was a great program for.
It really was.
But it's not something I stuck with. You know,
because
I know how to do all that stuff. You know,
is there a program built into Windows 7 if I just had a function that I could be doing the same thing?
What is it you want to do?
I just want to be able to control. You know, everything is always trying to load itself onto my system every time it starts up. I want to take it down, pare it down, and keep it as simple as possible to keep all my RAM and my system as free as possible. And Tut was great for that. I mean, every time you open Adobe, it wants to load something.
I wonder if PC Cleaner, although it wouldn't be the same thing, or not PC Cleaner. Don't get PC Cleaner. I'm thinking of C Cleaner. C Cleaner allows you the ability to modify startup items and applications that are running in the background. Yes.
Okay.
And it's also great for cleaning and temporary internet files. Not as good as Tut, though. But
now, hey, by the way, guys, before we go any further, I see that Tut, in one place I'm looking at, answersthatwork.com, that they refer to a Tut on Windows 7 64-bit and in Windows 8 64-bit.
Oh, really?
So it's saying that there is the Ultimate Troubleshooter is available for both of those. So I would go back and look again. This is version 4, and this is from 2012. So I don't know if they're still around, but at that point in time, they're talking about Windows 8, and that's when Windows 8 came out, was in 2012.
Sure.
So I, to be honest with you, without doing more investigation, I can't tell you, and it looks like it's still $30.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for that trip down memory lane. I completely forgot about that application.
I had, and it was a really wonderful one. We were using it.
Yeah, we recommend it a lot.
Hey, Gary and Ed, thank you so much for being here this week, and for all the other folks involved in the program, thank you for joining us. Don't forget, InternetAdvisor.net is the place to go for all of our show notes from today. We will also be posting on Sunday night our podcast, and if you've been watching recently, what I do is I try to break the program up into different segments so you can just listen to, for instance, Josh Lindner's comments, or Mike Brennan's Michigan Technology News, or our second hour answering questions with you, our listeners. That'll all be available through InternetAdvisor.net, plus a number of items that we have down in news, where both Ed and Cal, for instance, commented on some recent computer meetings that have been out there. They're worth talking about. So thank you very much. And if you do have a question for us during the week, simply email us at InternetAdvisor.net.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show, Detroit's longest-running, locally-produced computer show with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and their team of experts. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or to find the show notes for this podcast, visit www.internetadvisor.net and look for us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.